got him there. Not even close. Could have been a hit and run because Zobrist was looking in the whole way and Hayward swung at a pitch that was down and out of the strike zone.
Probably what it was, but good call by Salvador Perez. But he won't have an easier throw out the rest of the year.
The Royals won defensive highlight. Yay! No offense, so let's just go to the defensive side of the thing. Yes, the Royals with no offense last night, no runs. And it's Salvador Perez gets the highlight because he threw out Ben Zobrist by a mile and a half. And yet the Cubs win 5-0, thanks to former Royal Mike Montgomery shutting them down. And the Royals are now 34-79. The Royals have now lost six in a row. Bad Keller was not bad, Brad Keller. He did all right, but he couldn't shut him out. And the Royals' offense continues to struggle. First of all, wasn't very good with Moose in the lineup. You trade Moose away, that obviously hurts you. Royals right-hander Heath Fillmyer will be on the hill against left-hander Jose Quintana, former White Sox, now a Chicago Cub, as the Royals will try to salvage the final game of the three-game series against the Cubs there in Kansas City. When I was watching the other night, it felt like a Cubs game. I mean, there was Cubs when they hit the home run. When I tuned in, and 30 seconds later, boom, home run for Javier Baez. They gave the Cubs the lead. It was Cubs. You could just, all of the Cubs fans you could hear. And the Cubs fan made the catch on the home run out in the outfield behind the fence. It was like a second coming of Wrigley Field. And that's what's happened. The Royals went from back in the day, before they got good, of course, back in 2000, say 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, whatever. You can pick out any year between basically 1985 and 2000, probably 14, 13. 13 is when the Royals start to get better. When the Cardinals came to town, it was more red than blue at Cofferman Stadium. But then the Royals got really good for a 3 or 4 year stretch, and then that changed. Well, guess what? We're back to where we started. Yeah. Cubs dominating the stands and being the loudest because they have something to cheer for, and that is, well, the Royals have something to cheer for, the one defensive highlight that Salvador Perez provided last night. It's kind of sad that an opposing team could come in and dominate, and you can hear them all the time. But, you know, when the Royals were good, I remember there was a game at Camden Yards in Baltimore where you could hear the Royals, let's go Royals, clear as day. So what goes around, comes around, goes around again.
Yeah.
That's kind of what's happened to the Royals, right?
And it'll hopefully come around.
I hope so.
I remember a lot of places in 2014 and 15 outside of Kauffman that you could hear the Royals chant on the broadcast.
Brad Keller, not a bad performance last night. Worked six innings and battled through when he didn't have his best stuff. But when the offense can't score you any runs, it's tough to win. And the Royals continue in their quest for the number one draft pick in Major League Baseball in next year's MLB draft. All right, I do have some local sports news. There are new practice rules implemented by Acacia. Some coaches are cool with it. Some coaches don't like it. Some people don't like change no matter what it is. Some, basically, what I've heard about is a lot of states around Kansas started practice on Monday of this week. They're starting a week earlier. And that's a bit, one of the biggest complaints I've seen. Coaches aren't really having a big problem with the restrictions on the practices once the practices start, per se. Although two-a-days, there's some coaches that like to have more of the two-a-days. But they would like to have the extra week to squeeze everything in because they can't officially start in the state of Kansas, according to the Acacia guidelines, until Monday, August 13th. And the first football game will be August 31st, which means you've got about 2.5 weeks, really. I mean, you could say 3 weeks, but you ease them into it early on. Mm-hmm. So you maybe got 2 weeks of full pads, maybe, depending on how each school handles it. Of course, the guidelines as well from Acacia. And I guess I've always wondered, do coaches really follow that closely? And if they don't, who turns them in?
Yeah.
Because it's not like Acacia's got officials at every single high school in America. Or not America, but Kansas.
Yeah. I would think it's the players and parents that would have to do it if somebody was actually going to turn them in for not following the guidelines.
What would be the penalty if they didn't follow a guideline? Let's say they had one extra two a day.
Yeah.
Just miscounted or something. What would the penalty be?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they'd take away a game or have to forfeit something. I don't know what they'd do in that situation. I don't think that a lot of people are breaking the rules, and I don't think that a lot of people are turning them in if they do.
I'm guessing there's a lot extra that are very close to bending the rules.
Oh, yeah, and I think that's the case probably in anything like that where coaches want to get as much time as they can before the games start.
Right.
The players don't necessarily. They're always ready, after about a week, they're just ready to stop hitting each other football-wise and stop practicing against each other and all the other stuff. But, yeah, so – you know, the biggest difference, like you said, is the two-a-day thing. You can't do that in the first 5 days of practices, and you can't have more than 3 hours of one practice session through that first 5 days, which would be your first regular week of practice there. So that's the biggest thing. And that 3 hours includes everything from when you're warming up to your conditioning to your lifting weights. That's all included. You can't exceed a three-hour period in that first week, and you can't have two-a-days. Now, beginning on day six, you can have two-a-days. You can have a three-hour max practice. Can't exceed 5 hours for the two practices that you'd have in a day. But then, you know, a lot of coaches, when they start two-a-days, they're doing that more. They're doing that basically all week. You can't have successive consecutive days with two practices in one day. So if you have two-a-day on Monday, you can't do it on Tuesday. You got to wait until Wednesday to do another two-a-day. So that those are kind of the biggest changes and the gist of what they're doing. And it's called for getting acclimated to the heat, basically, is why they do that and why they've made those restrictions here in the state.
You also have to have five single-day practices as a player before you can participate.
Yeah, every player, yeah. Yeah, so if they were sick, you know, on one of the first 5 days, they've got to have, they can only go to one of the practices on the fifth day, and then they can go to the 2 days following that. So that's just for, you know, like you said, every player has to have five full single practices before they can participate in 2 days.
Which means coaches have more to keep track of.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of that as well. All right, that's all posted at nckssports.com. You want to see the newest football practice regulations, rules set aside there by Keisha after doing some studies. That's what they came up with. Some coaches are like, hey, it is what it is. We'll deal with it. Other coaches are complaining about it. Others are kind of whine about it, but move on. All right, the Chiefs, we were just talking about this yesterday, that odds are the Chiefs are going to have a significant injury. Eric Berry, of course, had a big one last year, sat out the whole season. I predicted Kareem Hunt's going to be banged up. It's going to miss a game or two. That's why we were talking about Damian Williams as a backup running back, or maybe Spencer Ware or Tre'Kendrick West will come through. Sammy Watkins is injury prone. Perhaps a Byron Pringle or a DeMarcus Robinson or Chris Conley's healthy. Other guys will step up and fill the void if Sammy Watkins gets hurt or Tyreek Hill goes down or Travis Kelce, whatever the case may be. Of course, we saw Kelce, he's dealt with a few concussions in his career and missed part of the playoff game last year against the Titans, and then nobody really stepped up after he left offensively. The Chiefs, one place they really can't afford to have a lot of injuries, it seems like, is the weaker part of their team, and that's their defense. And Kansas City Chiefs safety Daniel Sorensen expected to miss time as he has a knee injury. It will require surgery, and according to various reports, he will miss about 8 weeks. So he will not miss the season, but it's a surgery involving the tibia, and it'll force him to miss the entire preseason and part of the regular season. So if you go 8 weeks, that would mean he's going to miss at least the first four games of the season, which would be a quarter of the season. Sorensen was expected to start at safety alongside Eric Berry. So you got Sorensen hurt, Berry coming off a serious injury. Ron Parker was let go. And then the next guys up would be Eric Murray, who didn't look very good at safety last year. And they got the rookie Watts from Texas A&M, who I would guess is not ready for primetime quite yet. And so the Chiefs are a little thin when it comes to safety, especially with the latest injury with Daniel Sorensen.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about it, you don't want to get injuries on the defense and in the defensive backfield especially.
Yeah.
Like, we've been talking this whole time how thin that part of the defense is, and I don't know. That's not good news at all. If they would have to go, like, a long term without, like, say it's only – first three or four games right now, if it would go up to 8 weeks, but still he's got to get back in and acclimated to everything once he does get back.
Odds are it'll be more than four games he'll miss,
but yeah,
might be five or six. It's a blow to the defense. Is he a superstar? No, but he's an important part of the defense.
Yeah.
Here's Andy Reid talking about how the defense is evaluated.
You're looking for assignment football. You're looking when the juices get going, how you handle that. You know, you're in the stadium with the fans there. We've got a great turnout here, but it's a little different. Lights are on, and you know, it's game time. So it's one more evaluation period that you have a chance to see these guys in.
We'll talk more about the Chiefs coming up tomorrow on the Sports Ticket as the Chiefs preseason opener tomorrow night at Arrowhead against the Houston Texans. Pregame at 6 o'clock and home for the Chiefs in North Central Kansas, Z96.3 The Lake. We can pull up some of the observations that the Chiefs post on their website as to how practice went on Tuesday. Usually they show the observations. Did they practice yesterday?
They did.
Okay, so they don't have
the observations. It was a light. It wasn't a...
Maybe that's what they're
going
to...
No pads.
Not much.
Sort.
Okay, so no observations. It was last day of pads before Thursday's preseason opener on Monday. Running back Damian Williams continues to impress. That's the guy I said that I think could be a surprise for the Chiefs this year. Talked about that yesterday. Reggie Ragland back up and going after missing early part of training camp due to some swelling in his knee. So he's getting more reps. He's going to be an important part of the defense. And let's see. Steve Nelson picked off a pass for Patrick Mahomes on Monday at practice. So Mahomes with another pick there, although that's, I think we all agree, it's not that big a deal. And there's a few nicks and bruises and bumps here and there. Anthony Hitchens missed some time with a hamstring injury to now pass now. Defensive end or linebacker missed some time with an injury to heel. Defensive tackle Derek Nnadi from Florida State, third-round draft pick, elbow injury. They're all back on the field on Monday, so nothing serious as the Chiefs get ready for the preseason opener coming up tomorrow night in Kansas City at Arrowhead. You guys hungry?
Yeah. A little bit, to be honest with you.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, how hungry are you? That would be the question. The Arizona Cardinals football team, they've unveiled several new menu items, and the star of the show is a $75 hamburger that will probably send your cholesterol through the roof if you just look at it. The new food item, which is called the Gridiron Burger, weighs a total of 7 pounds and consists of 11 different ingredients. Well, I'm sure they're all healthy, right? If you want to make this thing at home, ladies and gentlemen, please grab a pen and paper, a pencil if you need to erase. If you want to make this Gridiron Burger at home, here's what you need. All you need is this. All you need to make a $75 burger is this. 5 burger patties that each weigh 1/3 of a pound, 5 all beef hot dogs, 5 bratwurst, 20 slices of American cheese, because 19 wouldn't be enough.
Oh, Lord.
8 slices of bacon. Why? Because 7 wouldn't be enough. 8 chicken tenders, 12 ounces of fries, lettuce, tomatoes, pickles, and it says tanker sauce. Oh, and you need a 10-inch bun as well. Although the Cardinals didn't list the total amount of calories in the Gridiron Burger, someone on Reddit did the math, and it looks like the thing contains roughly 8,000 calories, which would be 4 times the recommended daily intake for humans, which is typically 2,000. Now, this might seem like a lot of food to you and me, but there is an upside to eating all 8,000 calories that come with this burger. You get a prize! However, you only get the prize if you can finish the $75 Gridiron Burger in under 60 minutes. You get a full hour. That's right. If you crush this burger in under an hour, the Arizona Cardinal football team, they're going to hook you up with some free stuff. Not only will you get a free Cardinals jersey for finishing the burger, but the team will put your picture up on the Jumbotron. Well, that's worth it.
Woo-hoo.
Of course, after you eat the burger, the jersey probably won't fit you, and you'll look bloated on the Jumbotron. So maybe the Cardinals should rethink what kind of prizes they're giving away if you can finish the Gridiron Burger. Let me tell you something right now. There are going to be enough fools, and I'm going to call them fools, that are going to pay $75 thinking they can eat that whole thing in under an hour. And, you know, I'll bet you somebody can. And that's scary. And there's the obesity of America right there. Oh, I'm going to get a jersey for free. Do you know you paid $75 for a hamburger? You can probably find an establishment marked down jerseys for $75, or probably can buy one for $100. Now, if you're going to customize it and have your name or this and that, maybe you're going to spend $150 to $200. If you're spending $75 on a hamburger, you're probably going to need what? A $10 soft drink to wash it down? Or a $15 beer or something? You're probably going to spend just as much as if you would have just gone and bought a jersey and not gone to the game and not bought a $75 Gridiron Burger. That's just my advice. But if you really want your picture on the Jumbotron, then eat away.
Yeah,
I've got an idea for a new reality show, I think.
Oh, this would be good.
Called Joey Chestnut Eats America. And just goes everywhere to all these places that have, like, the challenges for if you can eat this, it's free, this $75 burger or this 10-pound chicken fried steak. And just send that dude around and see how many of these he can knock out and how much free stuff he can get.
If you don't know who Joey Chestnut is, he's the hot dog champion, was it 10 of the last 11 years?
Yeah, at least.
74 hot dogs, was it, that he did this year? 72, 74 in 10 minutes?
72, I think.
And buns. Hot dogs and buns,
yeah.
On July 4th.
He broke the record when you
again, his own record. And he holds the record in many other food eating categories as well.
Now. 74
okay. Was 74. 72 is a previous record.
Yeah, it must be.
And
yeah.
And so yes, yeah, so I want to see. I want him to try this. If he can eat the gridiron burger, I'd like to know how fast he could eat that thing.
Here's the problem.
He could do it. I guarantee he could.
Here's the problem, though, with Joey Chestnut trying to eat this gridiron burger.
Dude, there's 8 hot dogs on it. That'd be easy for him.
Well, yeah, you'd have to pull everything off, and because you can't dip a 10-inch bun in water like he does with the hot dog buns, you know, to soften everything up and make it go fast. He's gonna have to deconstruct that burger.
Well, absolutely.
And I don't know if you can do that. Is that part of the rules? Can you do that?
Nobody's
matters. As long as you eat it,
if you look, if you look at this gridiron burger, there, I don't know if anybody's mouth in all the world is big enough.
I mean, it's
to
got an hour
around.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a speed thing; it's a pace thing. You just got to get it done in an hour.
I'm not sure a cow could actually open their mouth wide enough to put this thing in. I think you would have to deconstruct it.
I had a burger down in New Orleans a couple summers ago that it was 6 inches high once you had all the stuff that they'd put on
it. You try to squeeze it and push it down, and you just can't make it.
No, I used a fork and a knife and chopped the thing up.
Yeah, that's what you're going to have to do with the gridiron burger. So check out the $75 gridiron burger at the Arizona Cardinals football games this season. It's a heart attack waiting to happen. Do they have medics on standby right there?
I like most of that food, but it just doesn't sound good altogether. You know,
I can't eat 8 chicken tenders, let alone 8 bratwurst, 8 slices of bacon, 8 hot dogs, 5 hamburger patties, 20 slices of cheese. Why 20?
I don't know.
Couldn't get away with 10?
Yeah, I don't.
My Lord. I don't know.
Guys, I have to admit, I was hungry before I talked about that. I'm kind of sick now.
I'm not sure the 3 of us could finish that off right now between us.
I'll tell you, we couldn't. There's no way. Wouldn't going to happen.
We should fast until tomorrow and have them ship one.
Yeah. Ship it on out. Sure, it'll stay fresh. That'd be great. Cost you $75 plus $75 shipping and handling.
For overnight.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, let's talk some K-State football, shall we? We won't talk KU football because, well, I think we understand. So K-State football, there's a lot of intriguing things going on with K-State football. And I think the most intriguing thing, well, I know most people are going to say the most intriguing thing, of course, is the quarterback competition between Skylar Thompson and Alex Delton. We're going to talk a lot more about that as we get closer to the beginning of the season. Riley Gates at GoPowerCat.com will be our regular weekly guest every Tuesday at 9:30 on the Sports Ticket, beginning on Tuesday, August 21st. And we'll have Brian Haney on every Thursday to talk KU. So we got KU and K-State covered from Riley and from Brian beginning later on this month. And to me, the next most intriguing thing about K-State football after the quarterback situation is the new coaches in different spots. And Andre Coleman, if you're a K-State fan and a diehard, you got to love what you're hearing from Andre Coleman. Don't you love what you're hearing from Andre Coleman?
Yeah.
First of all, this is why I wish K-State and Bill Snyder would loosen the reins a little bit and allow us, media and just in the public, to get to know these assistant coaches and have more access to them to talk with them and ask them questions. Because then you get to see these younger personalities, you know, Colin Klein, Andre Coleman, like Siler, right?
Mm-hmm.
And others. So Andre Coleman, an article from Kellis Robinette, who covers K-State, Wichita Eagle article here, offensive coordinator Andre Coleman, of course, who was a very good player at Kansas State, can sum up his coaching style with one word, demanding. He says it's the little things that count. If you're supposed to run a route 16 yards, then I want it 16, not 14. If it's supposed to be at the bottom of the numbers, I want you at the bottom of the numbers, not inside the numbers. All those little things when you watch film make the difference. I'm a stickler for the little things. So he pays attention to detail. He has a lot more energy than Dana Dimmel. Shocking. And maybe he won't hand it off. Andre Coleman have a son that plays fullback for K-State? So we won't hear those K-State fans whining about who scores touchdowns.
No.
Who's care? How did you say that? Who I cares hope. About scoring touchdowns as long as you score touchdowns?
Yeah, basically.
I believe that's open for our show every once in a while.
Every now and then.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Who cares who scores the touchdowns as long as we're scoring touchdowns?
Exactly.
Come on.
Famous words from a famous person. So.
Come on in there.
Come on, right. Man. It's bogus. So, Andre Coleman is the offensive coordinator. He takes input. He will take input from Colin Klein, among others. But what's interesting, when he was asked about, well, things are going to look a little bit different offensively this year, he says, and I quote Andre Coleman, "We are going to do a lot of the same, but with a little bit of a twist. We aren't reinventing the wheel. My biggest thing is making the game simple for my players. It doesn't matter what we, the coaches, know. It doesn't matter that we know it. It doesn't matter that the playbook is 6 inches thick and we know it. What matters is our players know it. The biggest thing I've tried to do is simplify it so our guys can play fast. It's going to look complicated, but it should be simple. So far, his twist is a hit with K-State players. Alex Barnes, very excited about the new coordinator, Andre Coleman. He says, absolutely, yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. K-State right tackle Dalton Risner says, I took a step further. He says he doesn't know what to expect from Coleman on game day, but he knows Coleman will support his players with unrivaled energy. The entire team seems to have confidence in him. It's awesome, as Risner says, it's awesome to have a coach who has your back 110% and wants to win. The guy's also super competitive. He doesn't have an ego, so forth and so on. It sounds like K-State's going to speed up the offense to where we won't have to be saying on almost every play, clock, play clock, oh no, we burned all three of our timeouts in the first quarter. That would be refreshing, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would be.
Bet you it'll still happen, but maybe not as often.
Like, I love what everybody's saying.
Sure.
I do.
Is it lip service or is
it? Alex Barnes was saying more the other day about how they're going to be spreading things out and this and that. I'm like, yeah, I think that's just posturing there to make everybody think that things are going to change a lot. Like, let's go into the public and say that we're going to be changing a good amount of what we're doing here. And then the Baylors of the world are going to think that we're going to come in and be a different team. Bill Snyder's already said, Let's put it this way: you're still going to recognize that it's a Bill Snyder offense, and it's what we're used to. I don't disagree that they're probably going to speed things up a little bit, and they're going to do some different things because, I mean, what's the point in having the young infusion and the different minds if you're just going to do the same thing?
Right.
But I'm going to guarantee here, early games in the season, there's still going to be that. Hey, play clock's running down. People freaking out about that. And then a timeout being used where you probably don't need to be using a timeout. It's going to happen early in the season. I'm pretty confident of that. Mm-hmm. Now, that might, as everybody gets into the system and it changes a little bit as it goes, I'll probably agree with what we're talking about here. But it's another one of those things where I'm going to need to see that before I believe everything they're talking about. I'm going to need to see you speeding up the game, because I don't see K-State really speeding it up a lot, because that's part of what makes them successful is that they try to keep time of possession. They try to shorten the game. They try to do those things. And I don't see them, unless they have the guns like an Oklahoma would, trying to speed it up too much.
See, I think the key when Andre Coleman says this is he's not saying they're going to do a fast break offense.
Yeah.
He's saying that it's going to be a little bit more up-tempo. To me, if you are now getting the ball snapped with 5 seconds on the play clock instead of two or one, that's plenty.
You've already made progress. Yeah.
You've already sped it up. And then you don't have to worry about burning the timeout and everybody panicking going, timeout, timeout, timeout. Yeah. So when he says they're going to speed it up, I believe him. I think they will speed it up. But when people hear speed it up, I think they think immediately in the Big 12, we're just going to go all out fast break offense. And he doesn't say that. He just says, we're going to pick up the pace. We're going to pick up the pace. We're going to speed it up, quicker tempo. Well, that doesn't mean that you're going to snap the ball with 15 seconds on the play clock. It's maybe going to be five instead of one or two like it's been in the past.
Exactly.
So he's not lying. He's right. And they will do that. And I think they will do that. And here's the other thing about, I agree with you, and I know Coach Snyder. It's going to look like a Bill Snyder type of offense. I get that. But I do believe Andre Coleman, there are going to be tweaks and twists.
Sure.
Because if there aren't, then why did you allow these guys to become your new offensive coordinator and coaches?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they're younger, they're hipper, they're more in tune with the players, they can relate to the players more. You can see the energy and passion already from a couple of the players we just quoted. So there's that energy. And you got younger guys like Andre Coleman, who's 45, Colin Klein, who's younger than that, of course. And that energy, Eric Hickson and others, you got this energy that you don't want to, I think, put a kibosh on it. I think it's good that you have that energy. Allow these guys to make some changes to the offense. I think Bill Snyder's smart enough to allow them to tweak it and make twists. I think he also is aware we can't run our quarterback 30 times a game every time. We might run him 15. And you also got some other guys that you haven't used very well. Dalvin Warmack would be one, which we'll get to in a moment, that maybe different minds and younger coaches have a better way of using them in different roles to be effective to make the offense or the defense, whatever side of the ball you want to look at, more effective and better using the talents of the players they recruited. And many times we've heard throughout last year, why doesn't Justin Simmons get the ball more? Why doesn't Warmack get the ball more? Why are they always running the quarterback all the time? Why is Alex Delton always calling his own number? Why are the coaches doing quarterback sneak every time or quarterback draw, quarterback run when you got Alex Barnes in the game against Oklahoma who runs for 100 yards in the first half and doesn't carry the ball in the first quarter and doesn't carry the ball again until the fourth quarter? I don't think that's going to be as big of an issue with these guys. I think Andre Coleman's smart enough to go, listen, we're going to mix it up to where it's not going to be all on one guy. Having said that, there are some reports that believe K-State's going to have a go-to running back, that there's going to be a guy that's going to carry a bigger part of the load than in the past when it's been running back by committee, or shall we say the quarterback who becomes the running back, which has been the way it's been at K-State for a long time. There's some that believe Alex Barnes is going to be given that opportunity to be the number one guy at running back and carry the ball more often during games, which I say, great. Justin Simmons ran the ball well when he was given opportunity last year. And then there's Dalvin Warmack. And Warmack has outstanding speed. He's very shifty. And he, of course, was going to transfer and leave K-State. But then he had a meeting with the new coaches, the younger guys like Andre Coleman and others. And they basically told him, listen, we're gonna use you. We got ideas. We have plans for you. And it was enough to keep him at Kansas State. Now, we've heard this before. Warmack's going to be a part of the offense. He's going to do this or that, whatever. But it's a little bit different now because there's a little bit more it's not quite as vague in regards to what they're talking about with him. They're talking about using him as a scat back, using him line up as a wide receiver. He's going to be here's what I kind of envisioned Dalvin Warmack being for the K-State Wildcats, and this may date myself a little bit. You remember David Meggett for the Giants?
Played for the Giants, yeah.
Yeah, he was a tremendous running back. Uh-huh. He caught more passes than he carried the ball, but he was a running back. Mm-hmm. But he was a guy that, you know, third down he'd get blocked, and he'd go out on pass routes, he'd run the ball occasionally, and he was an outstanding talent. And I think a Dalvin Warmack can be a poor Dave Meggett in this K-State offense if used the right way. And it's not like K-State, I think, is, like, overly super excited about their wide receiving core. I mean, I think they feel okay with it. But you add Warmack and get him in the open field, he can still carry the ball from time to time. But I'm willing, it says here in the story, and I think it might be true, that he might have more receptions, or at least balls thrown to him, than rushing attempts. Which, if that's the case, that might not be a bad thing, because that means either Justin Simmons or Alex Barnes is doing a good job at running back, so you don't need to have Warmack carry more of the load. And that allows him to be spread across the field. And I would guess that he's involved in some of these twists that Andre Coleman is speaking about. And maybe, just maybe, we'll get more of a sampling of Dalvin Warmack instead of just a piece here and a piece there, and all of a sudden he disappears.
Yeah, and that's all predicated on how well he catches the ball. You know,
sure.
I've seen a lot of that from him during his career, so I don't know how good of a receiving running back he is, you know, how good he catches the ball. But they do need – I mean, they don't have – the kind of depth at wide receiver that they did last year either.
Right.
After wide receivers were dropping the ball anyway, but
right.
You know, he's gone, Pringle left early, you know, they've got guys that are gone that are not with the team anymore. They're a little bit shorter at wide receiver this year. And so that's another opportunity to get another athlete in there that can catch the ball to kind of negate the problem that you have there with not as much depth at wide receiver. So that's, I mean, I love it. If he can catch the ball, I want him on the field because he is dynamic. He's short, so he doesn't have the breakaway speed like Darren Sproles did with that size that kind of limits him a little bit with his stride. So he doesn't have the breakaway speed, but he's shifty, he's quick. He can get away from tacklers, you know, on the outset and get away from them with the line of scrimmage, and that's going to be a key for a guy like that if you're going to put him out at wide receiver. Can he break free of the defense that's going to be on him? And he, I think he can do that as long as he can catch the ball.
Warmack says he's going to finish the year with more catches than rushing attempts, which you would hope that's a lot of catches then.
Yeah.
And Andre Coleman says, and I quote, Dalvin has a very unique skill set. He has great vision and great hands. He is going to allow us to do some things that will best utilize his complete skill set. As a coordinator, it's my job to get the best players on the field, and I think Dalvin Warmack is one of our best players. I am definitely going to get Dalvin on the field. You can believe that. And it's been mentioned he might see some time at running back, of course, his natural position, receiver, and maybe even line up as the Wildcat quarterback in the Wildcat formation. Why not? If he's one of your best athletes, you got to get him on the field. You got to find a way to do that. And I'll say this. If K-State's going to go with Skylar Thompson as their starting quarterback, and that's a big if. We don't know yet. But if they do, or at some point they settle on Skylar Thompson taking all the snaps, they got to find a way to get Alex Dalton on the field.
That's what I'm saying. When he talks like about Wildcat Sands, quarterback, Waters. It's like...
Wouldn't that be Alex
I
Dalton?
I think that's Dalton if he's not starting.
Right.
So...
Right.
They would probably know that too.
But I mean, if Dalton's starting, then
yeah.
But then maybe Wormack be the Wildcat. But aren't you kind of running the Wildcat really with Dalton in there all the time?
It makes sense. Well, the only way that makes sense is that you know you've got them both in the
right
the back in the backfield and you're doing some misdirection or something like that and do the direct snap to Wormack instead of Dalton, you know, and right. mix it up. Right. That's the only way that works, I think, is if Dalton's actually the starting quarterback to have any Wormack in the backfield taking shotgun snaps. I mean, I don't see that with Dalton starting. And I don't know. I just don't. I like the idea of him being a Wildcat quarterback. But when you've already got one on your team that probably knows how to run those kind of plays a little bit better,
mm-hmm.
I think I'd probably trust Dalton a little bit more than Wormack in that kind of situation.
Yeah, I would agree
with
that.
But like I say, that's all predicated on who they're going to go with it.
Right.
That quarterback.
Which we don't know yet, and we won't know, and we may not know even after the first game of the year.
We won't. I'm convinced we won't know.
Till the game against
Mississippi State the next week, you know, and so whatever they figure out in week one, then that's when we'll probably know.
I think in previous years, if they didn't have a that bigger non-con game this year,
it'd be
three cupcakes, they'd wait till the Big 12 opener.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd have to wait even longer. K-State football, talk more about that. Riley Gates of GoPowerCat.com beginning on August 21st as K-State will have their season opener against South Dakota, correct?
South Dakota, yep.
KU, of course, open their season as well. We'll talk more KU football with Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, later on here in the month of August as well. For golf fans, the 2018 PGA Championship is here. It begins tomorrow, and it will be just outside of St. Louis. 110 of the top 112 golfers in the world will be at the PGA Championship. And let's see, who are they picking? Rory McIlroy has the best odds. Jason Day, sleeper. They've got Brandon Grace, who I've never heard of. And one person has Tiger Woods missing the cut altogether. That's their bold prediction. Others that are considered favorites, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, who just won the tournament this past weekend, and Ricky Fowler go along with McIlroy and Day, which means, more than likely, none of those guys will win it.
Yeah.
It'll be Heimlich Hoffenheimer, somebody like that that you've never heard of.
Heimlich Hoffenheimer.
From Brazil, even though that's a German name. So, you know, it'll be something crazy like that, I guess.
Or Bill Smith.
Save your money, folks. Travel to Arizona. Go to Phoenix, Glendale, I guess it is. Go to Arizona Cardinal football game. Save your money. Find all the quarters in your couch cushions and buy that $75 gridiron burger. And I challenge you, along with everybody in Arizona, to eat it under 60 minutes. And then you get a free jersey, and you get a picture of you on the Jumbotron, more than likely, upchucking.